For those of you who don't know me, my name's Stuart. I'm one of the deacons here. And I'm carrying on the theme of faith in the workplace. And hopefully some of you have been here for some of the other sessions. And some of you will have been at a seminar at the Weekend Away, which I led on being missional in the workplace. And some of what I'll say kind of builds on that. So if you were there, some of it may be familiar to you. I thought it would be helpful, seeing as we're talking about the workplace, to give you a bit of background on my own experience of the workplace, and hopefully there'll be a few stories dotted through what I have to say today. I think the first point to make is that throughout this whole series, the term workplace is not just where you go to do something and someone pays you for being there. It's a very general and broad understanding of the term workplace, so whether that's voluntary work, whether that's in an office, in a factory, in a school, a hospital, whether that's at home as a mother or a housewife or house husband, father, whether it's actually that you're unemployed and it's what you do in the day to fill a lot of your working week or not working week or whatever it might be. For myself, I started with a fairly short and inauspicious career as a paper boy. I then, whilst I was working at university in the summers, I worked in a fairly high-end restaurant chain known as McDonald's. And when I left university, I actually worked here, well, in the old building for Woody for 2 years, and actually supplemented my income carrying on at McDonald's. So having worked down on the south coast in Weymouth, I then transferred to Cardiff. So I've had experience of McDonald's world domination firsthand. I then, having worked at Woody for 2 years, got a job with a company called DTZ, which is a global property advisory firm. And although I knew nothing about property, I was working in a team that did consultancy to local authorities, to property developers, to organisations like the Welsh Assembly Government on matters to do with the economy and regeneration. And I actually stayed there for 11 years because I'd kind of fallen into this career that I knew nothing about and actually quite enjoyed it. So I was there 11 years until in March this year, they decided that they were going to make our team redundant across the whole UK, which was, in the big picture, I wasn't surprised, but the timing was slightly surprising. Actually, 2 days after I'd led the seminar on workplace at the Weekend Away, which we'll come on to see was actually a blessing in many ways. So I've worked my notice at DTZ until the end of June this year, and as Gerwyn said, I've just started my own company doing the same thing. So I've had experience of working in, as I said, in McDonald's, in the church, working in an office environment, and in Cardiff our office kind of fluctuated between about 30 and 80 people over the years, depending on the strength of the economy. And that, as I said, it was an organisation that had about 10,000 people across the globe at its peak, a lot fewer now. And now I'm working in an office where, well, I work on my own. I've got a colleague who works in Bristol, and there are a few other people about. So I've had experience in different office settings, but I can't give you lots of personal wisdom on what it's like to work in a hospital or a school, but hopefully some of what I say will be relevant to your settings. In terms of how this today fits with the rest of the series, hopefully some of you were here about 5 weeks ago when David gave a really good biblical kind of basis and background on work, which I'll recap some of that in a moment. And if you weren't here, it's available on the Woody website, and I thoroughly recommend you to listen to it, because I think it's very helpful for anybody who's in the workplace to kind of have that sound foundation as to what God has to say about work. Sam Bamfield then spoke a few weeks ago about calling and excellence. Gerwyn spoke about integrity. And last week, Ian and Julie spoke about relationships in the workplace. And after today, which is all about how we can support one another in our work and in seeing the workplace as an important part of our lives, there's a couple more in the series about negotiating the culture in the workplace and seeking God's kingdom. And as way of introduction, I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from this book called Thank God It's Monday, Ministry in the Workplace. This was written by a guy called Mark Green, who David referred to a couple of weeks ago. And if you want, he's probably the guru on workplace ministry globally. And he works for the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity. And this, he starts with a quote from a woman called Wendy Somerville, who's a consultant in a hospital. And she says, "When it comes to my role as a Christian at work, I feel unsupported by my fellowship." He then goes on to say, "Wendy isn't alone in that feeling. Many Christians feel exactly the same way. But Wendy is rare in actually expressing such a feeling. Many Christians don't expect there to be any interest in the spiritual dimensions of their work or their fellowship to support them in prayer, except in times of crisis. The workplace and the people in it are not perceived as particularly significant. This lack of corporate prayer for the workplace suggests that we may have accepted the division our secular colleagues have drawn between the public world of 9 to 5, where our faith and our God are not meant to trespass, and the private world of 5 to 9, where we can do what we like." He then goes on to talk about his house group, and he says, "I see them most Tuesday evenings and 4 times a month at church, but I don't know the name of one person that any of them works with, and I don't think we have ever prayed for the salvation of any of their colleagues. They probably have, but as a group, we haven't. Why?" Hopefully today, as we go through this, we can work out ways that we can actually be a bit more supportive of one another in the different things that we do. And I just want to cover 3 points. Firstly, sort of understanding something of what God says about the workplace. Secondly, realizing about God's provision for us. And thirdly, then, our response to it. And I'm hoping that it will be very practical. So the first point is our ability to support and be supported flows from our understanding of work and the workplace. Just recapping on what David said a few weeks ago, God created work for us. It's not just something to be endured to pay the bills. It's actually important, it's God's given, and God is interested. If you read the account in Genesis 2 of when God gave Adam and Eve work to do, he then was actually interested to see what they did with that work. He didn't just leave them to do it and give it them as some kind of punishment. It was an important part of their life on the earth, and God was interested in how they dealt with it. In Colossians, we read that whatever work we do, we should do it as if it's for the Lord. And we should, whatever it is, whether you feel that your work is valued by society or not necessarily, that doesn't mean that it's not important to God. It is. And you should work at it with all your heart. On a practical level, work actually takes up a significant part of our lives, as David referred to. For many people, it's about 50% of their waking lives, maybe more. If you're a mum and that's your main job, it's probably 100% of your waking life and a good proportion of your sleeping life. It's also where we live out and work out our faith, where we can become better disciples. It's actually an important mission field, and for many of us, it's probably where we have the most contact with non-Christians of any part of our lives. And when in Mark 16, Jesus said, "Go into all the world and make disciples," he wasn't just talking about geographical areas, he was talking about every part of society, and our workplaces, I'm sure, were one of those aspects. For some of you, you might be the only Christian in your workplace, or one of very few. You might not know if there are any others, so you may feel very isolated. You may well be working in a culture that doesn't feel very Christian at all. And we'll come on in a moment to look again at one of the stories in the book of Daniel, which has some very distinct parallels with that. So if we're working in these situations, there are undoubtedly going to be challenges, whether they be practical, whether they be matters around work-life balance and our attitude to work and how they may differ to those of our colleagues. There may be ethical and moral dilemmas in your work. You may come up with theological challenges. There'll be relational challenges, as was discussed last week. I think it's important to remember that God is interested, and if that's the case, the church should be interested. And if we're dealing with challenges, it's important that we support one another. And that takes me on to my second point, which is God has given us others to support and be supported by. I think it's actually from that point that we need to be building. And we're going to look at the story of Daniel in chapter 2 in a moment. And just to give you a brief summary of chapter 1, if you haven't been here for any of the other weeks, Nebuchadnezzar had besieged and routed Jerusalem, and he took a number of Israelites into his service. And that included four that we hear about quite significantly in the book of Daniel. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they were given new names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar, Hananiah Shadrach, Mishael Meshach, and Azariah Abednego. And we hear in chapter 1 about how they were equipped by God. God had given them to one another. He'd put them in a place. He made sure they were equipped so that they could serve him and serve one another. And we see various examples of where they actually support one another. Now, originally, I was given the text of Daniel chapter 3, which many of you will know as the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. But I actually want to focus on a story in Daniel chapter 2. Sam will put the words of the scripture on the screen. If you want to turn to it, it's Daniel chapter 2. We'll start reading at verse 1 to 19. And then we'll skip the middle part of the chapter and pick it back up in verse 45. It's entitled Nebuchadnezzar's Dream. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. And men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. And then this is one of the significant paragraphs. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then we go on through the rest of the chapter, but Daniel explains the dream and its interpretation to Nebuchadnezzar. We pick it up in verse 45 when he says, "The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy." Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. So we've heard in chapter 1 how God has put them together and equipped them. And then we see in chapter 2, Daniel was aware of this situation and he went back to his friends who had been put there with him and asked them to pray. And the outcome of that situation is that glory is brought to God, as well as the fact that Daniel is promoted and he keeps his friends with him. As I said, in the next chapter, there's the famous story of the fiery furnace, when again, to God, they're asked to bow down to an idol that Nebuchadnezzar has built. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow and stand firm. And whilst we don't have a direct description, I'm sure that they found strength from one another. And again, another situation where they delivered glory to God. So there's two examples of where they were able to support one another in their working environment, a very hostile environment, and bring glory to God. And we know elsewhere from the Bible that we're given one another as support. In 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12 to 21, I'm not going to read it, but we have the account of one body and many parts, and how as a fellowship we actually need one another to be effective, whatever the roles are that we fulfill. And I know from when we did our marriage prep with Dave and Anne, one of the quotes that they often shared with us is that it's all very well saying you've got God, but sometimes you need someone with skin on. And I think that for all of us, we would probably agree with those situations, that we actually need one another to be able to work out our faith and to support one another in difficult situations and often in the everyday of our lives. I just wanted to share a few personal examples of where I believe God has provided for me through others in this fellowship or in the workplace. Going back to my time at McDonald's, I'd, as I said, worked for 3 summers in Weymouth, and then I transferred to Cardiff, and I was lucky to get a job there. I'm sure there was no nepotism going on, but someone in the fellowship, Richard Matcham, was one of the managers there. He managed to get me a job. But I was very glad that he was there, because there were some differences in the way the two McDonald's worked. And fortunately for me, he'd also worked in the Weymouth McDonald's. And one slightly humorous, but very glad he was there example, was you'll often see the people sweeping the floor in McDonald's with one of those dustpans on a long stick. Well, when I was in Weymouth, that was known as a monster. I have no idea why, maybe because it looked like some kind of big mouth that just you brushed all the dust and mess from the floor into. Well, I'd been given the impression that this was standard McDonald's parlance for a dustpan. So I was then in Cardiff, walking around saying, "Has anyone seen a monster?" Getting fairly strange looks from the majority of staff. At which point, Richard fortunately said, "You mean a dustpan?" I said, "Well, yes." And he was able to explain, fortunately, because he'd been there and knew what the term monster meant, what that meant. Now, that would have been, it was a highly embarrassing situation as it was, but it could have been an awful lot worse when I was then even struggling to come up with the word dustpan, which everybody else was using for what was fairly a standard piece of equipment. But actually, there were many ways in which Richard supported me in my time there that actually allowed me to be more effective in my work in Woody at the same time. Then when I left McDonald's and left Woody, I was looking for a graduate job. And as I said, I ended up working for DTZ. Now, luckily for me, it was the only job I applied to at the time. It was a slightly healthier economic environment. But I just saw this random job advert in the careers service at Cardiff University, asking for someone to come and work on matters to do with the economy in South Wales and further afield. Now, I'd studied economics at Cardiff University, generally I knew some of the theoretical stuff, but I'd actually forgotten most of that. I'd learnt it for my exams. I was quite an effective crammer, but I wasn't a very good learner. I wish I could do my degree now again, because actually some of it would have been quite interesting to know. Anyway, I got an interview on the strength of the fact that I had studied a relevant subject. And I knew I was going to have to go and talk about the South Wales economy. Well, I knew nothing about the South Wales economy. I'd lived in Cardiff for 5 years by this point, but I'd grown up on the south coast of England. I didn't know anything about the geography of Wales. I didn't know about the issues in the South Wales valleys, about the role of Cardiff as a capital city, about some of the, you know, the way the economy had worked over the last 15 or 20 years in Wales. But fortunately, Gerwyn offered to sit down with me one Sunday evening. In fact, it was the Sunday evening before my interview on the Monday afternoon, and gave me a summary of what had been going on in the South Wales economy. Fortunately, I got into that interview, and they said, "So, tell me a bit about the South Wales economy." At which I parroted back to them exactly what Gerwyn had told me the night before. Anyway, I managed to get through that interview. I got through a second interview and got the job, and I asked for some feedback. And one of the things they were astounded by was my knowledge of the South Wales economy, which I'd obviously known for about 10 hours before I told it to them. Anyway, I'm sure that was a way that God provided from someone in the fellowship for me to be able to get into that workplace. When I was there, there was another woman in the team who was about my age, who had actually was friend of a friend through the Christian Union at Cardiff University, who actually was really able for me as I found my feet in what was a fairly secular workplace in many ways and the attitudes there. She stopped me kind of succumbing to some of the temptations that were there. We actually ended up praying for some of our colleagues together. And I'm sure that, you know, if that person hadn't been there, the way I approached work may well be very different. Many years later in my career, about 2 years ago, my boss of about 7 years left, and I had a new director all of a sudden, who then only lasted a few months. I was then transferred to another director, who then left. I'm sure it was nothing to do with me. I think it was mostly to do with the fact that the company was in all kinds of trouble. And I actually ended up heading up a team of 5 or 6 people across Cardiff and Bristol doing the work that we did. And that was quite a challenging time for me, having gone from a long-standing boss who we got on very well with together. I then found myself heading up a team. And actually, in many ways, God really confirmed that that was the right thing for me to be doing. On the weekend away, when Julian came and shared with us, Tanya and myself were lucky enough to have prophecy, and he actually prophesied over my work situation, and a lot of what he said was borne out in what happened with these people leaving, with responsibility falling in my lap. At the same time, I was given a mentor who was one of the directors based in our London and Reading offices, who it turns out has been a Christian for many years. He's known to some other friends of mine. And it was really encouraging through the time that he would be, you know, when I was doing things for the first time or dealing with difficult situations that I didn't feel that equipped to do, he would send me encouraging emails. He would ring me and say that he was praying for me. And again, I believe God provided for me in that situation with another senior manager who was a Christian who could actually encourage me in what I was doing. As I said, I was made redundant in March of this year. We'd just done the seminar on how we could be more missional in our workplace, and we touched on issues about how we could support one another. And I was talking after the seminar with Bub and with Adam, and we sort of said, well, actually, what we need to do is if we're, you know, confronted with difficult situations, maybe we should text each other or email each other, you know, and see if we can get advice from one another, ask each other to pray. When 2 days later I get to work, one of my colleagues came in and said, oh, I've had a message that one of the directors in London is coming down to talk to me about my role. You know, I don't think I'm being promoted. It was quite clear from the tone. I wonder, I think I'm being made redundant. He actually asked me if I could go to the meeting with him. Well, Then I thought, oh, actually, so that's funny. I just dropped my car off at the garage and I had a missed call from a mobile, which I don't recognise. I listened to the message and I had exactly the same message. So as you can imagine, on a Tuesday morning, 9:10, it's a bit of a shock to know that you're going into a meeting at 10 o'clock when you're going to be told that you don't have a job, having been working there for 11 years. And that's the first forewarning you get. In fact, only 2 weeks before, you'd been told there weren't going to be any more redundancies in your team for the next year. So you kind of just aren't thinking, well, I'm actually on a firm footing again. It's been a difficult environment, but I'm going to be fine. Well, having rung Tanya and told her the good news, which was kind of ruining her Tuesday slightly, I was then able to text Adam and Bub straight away and just say, can you pray for me as I go into this meeting at 10 o'clock? And to be honest, I've never felt a peace like I had in that meeting. Many of my colleagues didn't deal with that situation particularly well. It was quite a challenging time, as you can imagine, and some of you will have been through similar. But I didn't feel any anger towards the people who were making me redundant. I was able to have a very clear perspective on why they were doing it and the fact that it wasn't pleasant for them either. And over the course of the next few weeks, for those of you who've been through redundancy, you'll know there's quite a lot of legal process caught up with it. Adam is a solicitor and he was able to give me a lot of very helpful advice. And again, I'm sure that God provided those people for me in that situation. Again, when I then shared it with the ministry team on the Sunday morning when I went for prayer, because I thought this is probably a significant enough life event to venture forward, I ended up speaking to someone who not that long ago, I didn't know, had been made redundant. And I was able to speak to others. And I feel that, you know, I've been able to deal with what could have been a really terrible situation very positively, and actually got very positive feedback from the guy who was in charge of the redundancy process, actually wrote to me and said, thank you very much for the way that you've dealt with this, for the leadership you've shown. And I was able to, I believe, support some of the others in the team and hopefully show them something of what God was doing in my life through the way I was behaving. I'll have to leave that to him to see if anything comes of it. And then even recently, as I said, I've now set up a business with this guy who's actually a boss of mine for 7 years. And venturing into self-employment was kind of a big step into the unknown. But there have been other people, particularly Justin, who does a similar thing running his own business, who I've been able to spend time with. And so at all these junctures, God has put people in my way to support me in the workplace. So I'm absolutely convinced God is interested in our work. He provides for us. And I could, as I've just been able to go through, several individual instances in my own work. The only thing, as I reflected on this when I was preparing, was that there's kind of a big gap in the middle of this regular, ongoing support where, you know, I've been praying for people in my workplace, but have I had people around me who know a great deal about what I do, who know who the people I work with, who are also praying for them, who are praying for my work situation? I'm sure there may be, but probably the same as Mark Green in his book, and you may be the same. Are there people who know, other than in the sketchiest outline, what you do, who you work with, what the challenges are that you face, what the issues are that you're facing on a day-to-day basis? Are there people that you will turn to for wisdom? And so finally, my third point is we need to have the opportunity to share and to hear in order to support and be supported. I'm very encouraged by hearing the stories of others, and that's one of the ways that you actually know who to go to in any given circumstance. I knew what it was that Gerwin did and was able to ask him to tell me a bit about the South Wales economy, and I'm very glad I did because it gave me a job for 11 years as a result. And they probably want a cut after this. Just listening to the sermons in the series thus far, I've learnt about other people's work situations that I knew nothing about. When I led the seminar at the weekend away and we broke into groups and I was able to hear about, you know, the life of some of the people around that table, people who worked in very different settings, whether it be nurses, students, people in other lines of business, and actually hear about some of the challenges they face and the way that their faith is relevant to what they do. So if we don't hear that, we're not able to support others, or we're not able to ask them to support us. When I think about people sharing testimonies, there's one instance that's very vivid in my mind that's really relevant to the workplace when Chris Collins talked about when he prayed for one of the cleaners for healing in his work. And I think the reason it stands out is that it's actually one of very few, I believe, that relate to the workplace. And is that because we haven't got good news stories to share about our workplaces? Is it because we haven't got, or we don't feel able to give testimony sufficiently often? When you look at the story of Daniel, he shared the situation with his friends. He didn't just keep it all to himself. He was able to say, look, this is a situation I've got going on at work. Basically, we're all going to die if we don't come up with this guy's dream and interpretation. I'm sure it focused the mind, and probably you would be calling in support as well. But he asked for prayer support, and God was glorified. And I'm sure for us, we would like to see God glorified in our workplace and among our work colleagues. There's someone else here who, when I was speaking to them about work, they were really keen to speak to someone else who was facing some of the similar issues in their workplace, but they weren't sure who else would do a similar job because they just weren't aware of what they do. You know, hopefully someone will speak to someone and they can find out through networks, but are there better ways that we can actually encourage one another and make it happen? If you don't tell people your situation, they can't help. If you don't know others' situations, they cannot help. If there are no opportunities to share, we will only know about our close friends. So how might we be able to do this? Well, I think home groups are one vehicle. Obviously, there's lots of good stuff going on in home groups, and some of you may find that a really important support to your work situation. Others of you may not find it in quite the same way. Do you know what others do in your home groups? Do you know the issues they face, the challenges, the people they work with? Maybe you need to get a deeper knowledge about them and spend some time sharing in your group. Pray for each other and pray for their colleagues. And I've always been amazed at what happens when you pray. Maybe you do need to find a few close friends who you know work in similar environments, much as happened with me and Bub and Adam on that occasion, and maybe that was for a season. Maybe it's something that we need to carry on. But actually find some people that you can contact in the immediate if you've got a situation developing at work. If you end up facing a moral dilemma or you've got a difficult problem, are there people you can turn to? We've been given to one another. There are people with many skills, and I'm sure that we can support one another, and just actually by having that support network can be a great witness in itself. If there are other Christians in your workplace, I'd encourage you to meet with them, find out about them, pray about your workplace. Maybe it's appropriate to meet with other people who work in your area of the city or do a similar thing with you. And Bub was setting up this idea called Business Lunch, and I think he might come and say something more about it at the end today. But I'd encourage you to sign up, get together with other Christians who are working, whether you work in the city centre or at the hospital, in the Bay. And Bub is trying to set those meetings up based on people who sign up in sensible geographic locations. Maybe you want to meet with other teachers, with other nurses, with other mums. I think mums are actually the best at doing it. They realise they're doing an important job. They realise it's difficult. They realise there's challenges. And you'd be amazed how much they manage to message each other, speak to each other, and get support from one another. And I'm sure they could do more, but compared to people in the workplace, they just knock spots off us. Maybe we need to have more opportunity to give testimony, and you need to be ready to give testimony about what's going on in the workplace. In lots of the books, there's examples of churches where they have a slot called This Time Tomorrow, and maybe the person leading the service will invite someone up to just speak for a few minutes about what it is they do, what will they be doing tomorrow, who are their colleagues, what are the challenges they face. And it's a good way for actually, as a whole, us to hear about what's going on with other people. If we see our workplace as an important mission field, and for many of us, it is where we're called to, should we have a board up saying where people are missionaries in our city? We'll often do that for people who are sent to far-flung parts of the world. It will say something about them and the situation they're in. Do we do that for each other and missing the important mission field that many of us are working on our own doorstep? As I said from my own story, go and see the ministry team when you've got situations at work. They're perfectly valid to get prayer for. Maybe you could invite the pastor into your workplace. maybe you don't want to give him a grand tour of your factory or your office, but even if you invite plan to go for coffee and he comes into reception on, as he meets you, he'll meet someone in your workplace, get something of the essence of where you work. I'm sure Dave would be happy to come and see some of you, just don't all do it for this week. And pray for others in their workplace. Don't just think this is about how people can support you. How can you support others? Pray for them. Find out about what their challenges are. And pray for your own workplace. I know one of the things I did, particularly recently, and I'm sure it kind of happened in the build-up to the redundancy, I set a reminder in my phone every morning so that it buzzed before I went to work to pray for my workplace, because I always wanted to do it, but I didn't always remember. It was a really helpful way of making sure I regularly prayed for the people I worked with. So there's a challenge there. There's lots of different ideas, and some of them will resonate with some of you and not with others, but pick up on the ones that you do feel drawn to and act on them. For the church, there's lessons for us as to giving you the platform to share. For home group leaders, there's maybe something for how can you use the time in your home groups to allow each other to get to know about work situations. And as individuals, think about how you need to respond. So just as I sum up, do you desire to bring glory to God in your workplace? Hopefully you do. You need to have a proper understanding of what God is saying about work, about the workplace being important, about it being an important mission field. You need to remember that God has given us one another. Don't try and do it on your own. If you're a Christian in a difficult workplace, remember there are people who can support you. And remember to share that with others and to listen to what others have to say. I'm just going to finish off reading a further bit on the story about Wendy that we heard at the beginning. And Mark Green goes on to say, "Wendy, I am glad but somewhat ashamed to confess, is in my house group. She hadn't felt supported in her work by our group, though I think she certainly would have felt supported in other areas of her life. We had prayed for some specific situations, relationships and patient care and the restructuring of the health service, but actually we had only the sketchiest notion of what she did day by day, who she worked with, what kind of pressures she was under, what kind of issues she faced. So one evening we asked her to give us a sketch of a day in her life. It took an hour. Some people's jobs are less complex and might only have taken 10 minutes. But at the end of the time, we had a much clearer picture of how Wendy spends 65% of her life and therefore how we can pray for her. But as a group, we're not there yet because we're still not asking the spiritual questions about work automatically, nor seeking prayer from one another for work issues automatically, nor challenging one another about ministry in our workplaces or wherever it is that God has put us. We need to reorient our thinking, not to make work issues the primary issues or even the dominant issues, but rather to redress the balance so that people know that God and God's people are genuinely interested in the way they spend 65% of their waking lives." So I think that's all I want to say and just challenge you to pick up on some of that, and if it's relevant to you, to implement it. And let's see God glorified more significantly in our workplaces.